fine. Okay, so we're up to, I guess, the last part of the Mishnah, which is that after we just said that you cannot calculate, there's no way, the Torah didn't tell us the relative rewards for ases, the Mrs. Ases. So therefore we don't know them. Even though in theory, Phil, it would be better if we knew them, we'd be able to use those that knowledge to calculate, you know, the degree to which we should put into the zehiros for every mitzvah. But because not everything is equal place insofar as the system is concerned. But the Torah didn't tell us that, and we conjecture that because if you would, there's a danger that a person's going to downgrade and not pay attention to certain mitzvahs. And that's really where the ethical component of this Mishnah is, that a person has to relate to the mitzvahs on an intellectual level and can't let his emotional predilections get involved and cause him to weight them inappropriately. Okay, because we don't even know the weights, and still a person emotionally does that. Certainly if the Torah actually gave us weights, a person would do that even more so. Okay. So it says, but yet the Mishnah then says, even though that's the case, a person could calculate the loss of a mitzvah in accordance with its reward. That is, as the Rambam explains, you could tell that if there is a way to rank mitzvahs in a certain sense, which is that certain mitzvahs, if you don't do them, then you have very bad things, you get their negative consequences. Okay, so the Aseis of Kares, for instance, or Shabbos, where the Asei is Shvisa, but has a parallel Los Asei, of, don't do Malacha, and then putting up a fence, which also is parallel Los Asei, don't keep something dangerous in your house. So in those Aseis, so you could rank it, because you know that for violating Shabbos, you get Skila, for violating Milo or Kara or Pesach, you get Kares, for violating the fence, you get Lav, it's regular Lav, same Malkus, or not even. So that being the case, so you could see, therefore, that skila, that the Shabbos is worse. Okay, so it's a greater scar. Or you could see that it's a greater scar. Right, that the scar of resting on Shabbos is greater than that of Mila. And Mila greater than making a fence. And similarly, he says the opposite, that when you want to know the schar for refraining from doing an aveira, so you could tell how great your schar is based upon how terrible the punishment is if you do the aveira. And there's the ratio in the same manner. Okay? Fine. So our question is, first of all, it seems to undermine his premise that the Torah didn't give us any way to calculate, then tell us the ranks, because the person's going to misuse it. But now all of a sudden there is a way, so doesn't this undermine the whole idea that Torah didn't tell us? And second of all, is that really an appropriate way to figure out the schar of mitzvahs? Because if you violate the thing, it's terrible, doesn't necessarily mean that if you do it, it's great. Those aren't necessarily identical. Right? Because maybe in violating it, this person who is willing to violate is such a terrible guy, but the doing it is an easy thing, and there's no big whoop. So if a person does that, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to get the greatest reward. Why does it necessarily follow that they're exactly identical? Right? You could argue that it's much harder for a person to do Mila than it is to keep Shabbos. So even though it's worse if you don't do Mila, it's worse if you don't do Shabbos. If you violate Shabbos, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's better if you keep Shabbos. Right? Why does it necessarily add up? How do you have a right to go from the violation to the harm of the violation to the reward of the fulfillment? Doesn't seem to necessarily add up. Maybe they're somewhat correlated, but it doesn't seem like you could just have an equation like that. Right. Okay, and then also in theory it would be nice if we could understand we could unify the Mishnah. Okay, but that's for later. I don't really have unification. I was hoping kind of once we do this, maybe we could figure something out together. I was thinking about it a little bit, but. Okay, but in the meantime, let's forget about that question. Let's deal with our first two questions. Okay? First two questions. Why isn't this undermine the whole idea that you don't tell us the rewards? And also, why is this... why is this a legitimate method of figuring out the schar based upon the loss if you violate? Yeah, okay, good. So I think Maris is right. is that the question is slipping back into the old framework that we're looking at things. That if you look at where, if you think we're talking about the reward, namely the perfection that one attains from circumcising himself, from being involved in the emotional difficulties and whatever it is that are involved in doing the mitzvah, you could say, yeah, there's greater reward in doing circumcision than in doing Shabbos, because it's harder, let's say. So harder is going to be in terms of your personal, individual relationship to the mitzvah and the way it's going to perfect your character in doing so. And the personal reward is not necessarily commensurate with the personal harm being done by violating these institutions. But if you say, realize that the framework of this Mishnah and the framework of Schar we're talking about here is the framework of a person's commitment to the system of the Torah, and the reward is for your adherence, your commitment and your adherence to that system, your continuance, being a part in the continuance of that system, and the punishment is because you're a member of Klal Yisrael and you're failing in that commitment, and you're thereby harming the system. So in that framework, perhaps this makes sense. Because keeping Shabbos means, and this is what someone said, I can't remember, someone said this in the first day maybe, so that keeping Shabbos is a person's recognition of he's involved in continuing this great important institution called Shabbos, and violating Shabbos is him denying this institution called Shabbos. And keeping Bris is maintaining, participating in this great institution called Bris, and not doing Bris is denying that, is negating that institution. So the positive, when you're dealing with the system, so far as the system is concerned, you have institutions in the system which are being maintained or being not maintained. And the reward is a person is committing himself to maintaining this institution, and the punishment is a person is denying this institution. And the relative reward or punishment is going in the system is going to be, well, how significant is this vis-a-vis the system? If it's very significant vis-a-vis the system, so you're going to get a great punishment for violating it. And equally, you're going to get a greater reward for maintaining it, because it's you're now a greater participant in the system. You're involving yourself in maintaining a significant component of the system. So maybe in terms of the individual perfection, that's not necessarily true. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about the reward and punishment by God for a person who keeping and violating the Torah. So in that framework, they really are, they're related. The positive and the negative are really two sides of the same coin. You're either involved in keeping or harming and destroying a part of the system. And the relative weight of this entity, this mitzvah within the system, is going to tell you its relative significance. So lulav, for instance, we don't know the punishment for not doing lulav. So therefore there's no way for us to rank lulav versus Shabbos, for instance. Because you know Shabbos is a very important part of the system. We don't know how much lulav is a part of the system, because there's no idea of not doing lulav. There just isn't a corresponding thing like that. So we just don't know. But when you're dealing with two things which do lend themselves to have a positive and a negative, then we could glean in the positive from the negative to the positive. Similarly, that he's saying, is another way around. That if a person controls himself and doesn't do an avera, then he gets a reward. Why? Because why is he not doing an avera? Because he's realizing that the system that is important in the system of the Torah, for instance, that people don't do arayos, that they don't sleep with their incestuous relationship, they don't sleep with an ida. That's very important. There's a system that destroys the system. If we are involved in a certain degree of sexuality, that undermines our identity as an Am Kadosh. So therefore, if a person does it, he undermines that identity. If a person controls himself and doesn't do it, it's because he's asserting that identity, he's recognizing that identity and contributing towards the fact that we're removed from our ayahs. So therefore the reward that you get for not doing it, insofar as the system is concerned, is going to be commensurate to the punishment for keeping it, for punishment for violating it. Again, not in the framework of the personal ethical midos perfection, in the framework of that this is a system which the Torah, which God gave to the Klal Yisrael, and He gave us the system, and there's a built into it that there is associated, that's the bris, that if we keep the Torah, God will reward us. And if you don't, then God will punish us. There's actually reward and punishment. So besides for just perfection, I mean, we think of it in terms of perfection. It's all about perfection. But there's an idea of reward and punishment as well. So you break the system, there are consequences. If you keep the system, there are consequences. And that's that concept, that system of consequences is based upon the relative value of the different mitzvahs and averos within the system. Yes. Okay, good. So the other question is, and this one I don't think we answered. The other question is, okay, fine. So now we can sneak a peek into the reward of these few mitzvahs, right? So, but isn't this against the idea that the Torah doesn't want to reveal to us the reward of mitzvahs? So now, for instance, we can sneak a peek and say that ma'akeh is not such a significant mitzvah because the associated punishment is not so great. So therefore, we know that ma'akeh is less significant than Shabbos, for instance. So why don't you say that this is against... What I'm saying is that we don't know the star of the mitzvahs. God didn't tell us the star of the mitzvahs, but we could know a little bit. Yeah, but I thought we shouldn't know because knowing is harmful to us. So isn't this right? Isn't this kind of against the idea of the beginning part of the Mishnah? Okay, so I'm thinking two points. Two points answer this question. I mean, one is like almost a factual point. The other one is a little more conceptual. Okay. But the factual point is that these ones which we had could rank, there are associated with them negatives, right? Negative consequences. And as we said yesterday, when it comes to negative consequences, the person is not going to violate negative things, or the danger doesn't exist when it comes to negative things, because he's a person has a certain fear or guilt or whatever attached with violating the Torah. So saying, since these mitzvos are not just positives, but they also have negatives, so therefore, a person, you don't have the danger of a person relating to them in this way. So now you have the negatives tell us, you could give us the rankings in the positive, and we're not going to fall into that trap. So a person is not going to look at Makkah and say, oh, it's a low thing, therefore I'm not going to do it. Because if he doesn't do it, then he's violating a law. And a person doesn't violate a law. That other person has a greater resistance to do it. So it's just practically speaking, when it comes to the ones that have associated laws, that you don't have that danger. Okay, so that's a good answer. I mean, it's solid, I think, because it just answers, it just kind of, the question is just kind of making a mistake. You know? But I think another answer, which I think is also true, which is that the danger is if the Torah said this is a light mitzvah, then a person is going to, fall into a certain trap. Okay, it's like if the Torah gave like an open ranking or you know, levels of mitzvahs, then a person can fall into the trap. But it doesn't mean if a person uses chachma and figures out, using chachma, a way to rank mitzvahs, and he comes up with a way to do it, if it's through studying the thing, so then it could be that's not how the person falls into the trap. It's like when the Torah says this is lenient, that's the Torah says that, like in an open shot way. That you don't have to like use your chachma to get to that, but it just it says it's plain, readily observable from the system. Like the Torah had positive rewards, and it said this mitzvah you get 100 points, this mitzvah you get 1 point. Okay, if there was such a thing, and then the 1 pointer there would people would reject. But now the Torah didn't do this. The Torah did not do that. Now, but still, a person can be. And that's what the Mishnah is on mechashev. Person could calculate, which means calculate is using chachma. He could think it through and come up and realize that there is a way that he could derive the levels of mitzvahs. So then a person is approaching with chachma. And when you're realizing that through chachma, then you're not in the danger zone. The danger zone is when a person just sees the thing on face value and he sees the rankings. It hits him like when he hears Kriyas HaTorah or whatever and he says, oh, that's a light mitzvah. And that would be the problem. The problem isn't if a person uses chachma. Once you're using chachma, then you're removed from the danger. You know, or it certainly mitigates it. And to that point, it could be, once it's through chachma, that's not a danger. That's appropriate. A person that says a person should do that. You want to do it. If you want to know it, Torah didn't hold a person can't know these things. It just held they couldn't say it explicitly, because that would, then a person, every Amaris, every person would just see it and be moved emotionally. But it doesn't mean that it's closed for Chachamim to start to figure them out. Chacham could through Chachma could try to figure these things out. And maybe the Rambam is not only telling, maybe the Rambam is just telling us one particular method, but maybe there are other ways to do it. I mean, Rambam's giving you a few examples, but I mean, it could be is that he's showing you that with Chachma you can do it, because once you're engaged in it through Chachma, so now you're basically, it doesn't hit you emotionally. Your emotions aren't moved by the Chachma. Your emotions are moved by the plain, you know, by a simple description. Torah says this is light, you know, but once Torah doesn't say that, so a person's emotion, he feels, oh, they're all the same. Now, Chachma could dictate it, but the part of him which sees it with Chachma doesn't get thrown off by these types of things. Part of sees it with Chachma, says, oh, so I should be very Zahir in this one, I should be regular Zahir in this one, and he'll get, so that part of him is not going to, on the contrary, it's valuable for him to know the relative rankings and to allocate his Zahiros accordingly. But it couldn't say it in a way which registers emotionally. It couldn't present it in a way that a person sees at first glance and would be moved by that, because that would be something which would cause a person to make mistakes. So certain things which could harm a person, if you tell them, are harmful to just tell a person insofar as they're not ready for it, or insofar as they don't come to it through Chachma. You know, that's why I think a lot of the things are like, it just reminds me, I don't know if it's exactly the same point, but it's like on a certain agadatas, like Chazal hid certain ideas in agadatas. You know, so Torah said certain ideas which could be dangerous for a person to certain people. If they told them the ideas in agadatas, they could harm them. But it did, they are there, and Chacham can get them. But the answer is, if you're a Chacham and you see the idea and you get to it, like let's say a certain insight would break down a person's fantasy and would cause them to be depressed and it would really harm a guy. He's not ready for an idea. So a person who's not ready for the idea is not going to see the idea. And you're not going to ever discover it. But a person who is able to discover it is a person who's at a level that their mind, that they're kind of in the framework of hearing that idea, and that idea can benefit them. So if a person discovers something with Chachma, so that means he's, so to speak, roi for that idea, and he's ready for that idea, and then it wouldn't harm him. But if the Chazal exposed it to a person who's not ready for it, and just told him the conclusion of the thing, he wouldn't be able to handle it. So there's an idea that certain conclusions could affect, even though it's the same conclusion, this is more chamor and this is more lenient, if a person sees it through, arrives at it through a system of chachma, he could relate to it properly, but if he arrives at it through just Torah revealing to him the conclusion, in a way which is not any chachma, just to then hit him emotionally and it would throw him off. It would cause him to downgrade certain mitzvahs. So I just think that's true. I think it makes sense. But I don't think it's necessary to answer this question because, I mean, at least in these particulars, because there's always you have the negative associated with it anyways. But I just think it makes sense anyways. And I think it's not saying that there's no idea of a person trying to rank, to come up with some sort of a system if you could figure out a chachmadik way to do it. Just saying is that in general you can't do that. And generally the principle is, machashiv, you know, that they're all equal and you have to treat them all the same. And it could be is that's why, like, Osei, someone said this, but Osei Mitzvah to Mitzvah is based on the universals. Universally, the system is that we don't have this. The system has to go by the basic universals that there's no, systematically, they're all the same. A person could be Mechashev and could try to figure things out, and they could use that in a certain way, but essentially they're the same in terms of the system. The system is for everybody, and that's the system, systematically, there's no rankings. But a person, through his own insights and his own studies, could end up seeing, you know, to see these things. Now it's true, it's in the Mishnah. But I mean, the Mishnah was for the Balei Masorah. I mean, it's true, I mean, like I asked, it's like it could hide it. But I mean, the Mishnah is kind of hidden. I mean, it happens to be nowadays, everyone knows Pirkei Avos, but it wasn't really meant to be for mass. I mean, originally, they were basically, it was passed to you to go to the Balei Masorah on the Mishnayos. So, I mean, I'm not saying it's a big secret, but it's a person who's in learning, who's studying, who's in Chachma, who knows this thing. It's not like Torah Shebichtav Sav is different. Torah Shebichtav Sav is open for the masses. It was meant to be for the masses. It was meant for everybody to see it. So the Torah had rankings in Torah Shebichtav Sav, that would be a problem. But this Torah Shebal Peh, this is Mishnah. So in general, Mishnah is meant for the Balei Masorah, for Chacham. And unfortunately now, everybody has access to these things, but it's not the way it was meant to be. But let me hold on a second. Yeah, so just a question we were asking is, what's the purpose of the last part of the Mishnah, which says that if you want to know the reward that you get from controlling yourself from violating an Avera, so the reward is commensurate with the level of the Onesh for violating the Avera. So my question is what's the purpose of figuring out how much reward you get for controlling yourself. Because either way, you have to control yourself because you don't want to violate the lo sasei. And you know the level of zehirus in doing so because you know how terrible the lo sasei is. So what do you gain further by knowing how much reward you get for controlling yourself in that, and for not doing it? Well, what purpose does that serve? And you'll say, well, now a person will be able to control himself better in stringent ones. Yeah, but he'll be able to control himself worse in the light ones. So that's going to, you know, in theory, that's going to fall into that trap. So what's the purpose of this whole part of the Mishnah? So Matt's saying, well, yeah, but the whole point is that this last segment of the Mishnah is not necessarily in terms of, is in terms of chachma, that you can be mechashev. You could think about these things and analyze these things and figure out the relative weights of the mitzvahs, the relative schar of the mitzvahs, and it's through chachma. So that's an intellectual pursuit, not necessarily because of the emotional, you're looking for the emotional, you know, feeling this is really important or not, but it's just a study. So he's saying, so this is also a study. This is also a study that you could analyze and understand the schar in an intellectual level. It's a schar for a person who controls himself in this thing. Will it make a difference? Not necessarily. It's telling you in the framework of the intellect, you know, the study itself. So then I ask, is, yeah, okay, but what new insights do you gain from knowing that? It's always exactly commensurate with the level of the onesh. So what, you already know how terrible the avera is based on the onesh. So what more do you gain from saying, oh, similarly you get that reward, a greater reward for controlling yourself? And what further do you gain from that? So Yonah is saying that, yeah, but maybe that's something that's important to keep in mind when you're weighing the severity of an onesh. Is not necessarily only based upon, again, this is purely in the intellectual sphere, it's not solely based upon how terrible the sin is, but it could also be based upon how seductive, or what's the word, how tempting it is for a person to violate that sin. And Ram talks about this, is that the level of onshim isn't always indicative, a worse onesh isn't always indicative of a worse avera, per se, that is philosophically necessarily worse, but it could also be indicative of the greater temptation that a person would have in doing it. And therefore, the Torah has to be more severe in terms of the punishment. The saying is that a factor. Whereas when you're studying the level and severity of different onshim and ranking mitzvah averos, and you want to understand the rankings, so you have to take into account not only the evil which comes about when a person does the thing, but also the tempting nature of the thing. Because something is very tempting, then the warning to prevent people from doing it is also more significant vis-a-vis the system. Because the system has to be kept. If you have something which is very tempting, so then this law is very crucial to the system because it's very likely a person would violate it. So therefore, it has to be, insofar as the system is concerned, it has to have a stronger place in the system because it has to occupy a greater level in the system, because otherwise it's not going to be kept in the same way. So when a person is studying, you don't just say, oh, this is more serious and this is less serious, but a person can gain insight into mitzvahs and studying that. So as the Mishnah is pointing out, you should realize that's another factor. An additional factor is the reward, not just the bad effects of the chait, but also the control and the difficulty a person has in controlling it, and how hard that is. This is a valid. It's saying that there's a valid pursuit of studying the rankings of mitzvos and all the different factors. In the abstract, there's nothing wrong with doing it, and it's a good pursuit, and it's part of understanding the chachos of the Torah. We don't have to just accept that, okay, these are serious and these are not serious. A person can study and understand them, gain insight, consider all the different factors responsible for it. There's a danger in the rankings when it's based on when you're talking to the person's emotions. Then there's a danger in rankings, is that it could end up playing into a dangerous territory and lead a person astray. But in the realm of the intellectual, studying the thing, a person can study the Torah, study Chumrah, Kal, study different reasons and the factors involved. That's important. That's an important part of Torah. There's no reason not to do that. It's just the Torah has to be aware of your emotions. And then just keep yourself in check is to be, you know, that not to be taken away, and that's why the Torah didn't tell us the weights of the sex. that there is a danger, and even though it didn't, you still have to be aware on yourself, know which mitzvahs affect you emotionally, and know not to be thrown off by them. You know, the really brings this out is the Rambam in the Maran Vuchim, where he talks about this, and when he talks about the Tamei Mitzvahs, the classes of mitzvahs, there's a class there which he has on punishments. And he talks about the different factors which are involved in the levels of punishments for different mitzvahs. He talks about it. It's not as simple as you think. It's not just based upon the severity of the thing. It's also based upon the tempting, you know, how likely the thing would occur and all, you know. And you could ask, but maybe that's not just, that a person gets such a severe onesh, if it's not such a severe sin, it's only because it's tempting. But I think the answer to that is that because it's more tempting, therefore vis-a-vis the system, it's more significant than the system. And so far as you're being punished, not just because of the perfection of the thing, but because of its role vis-a-vis insofar as the system is concerned. And since it's tempting, therefore the system is more... it's harsher, it's a greater break to the system, because violating that could lead to a real breakdown of the system. It could lead to people doing it, and, you know, to lead to more of a problem. So therefore, the harsh severity has to factor into account the system, the frequency insofar as the system is as well, not just the intrinsic philosophical evil of the thing. Now, regarding the unifying the things, I mean, I just realized this now, but there's another thing in the Mishnah which we didn't do. There's another line in the Mishnah. Okay, which is, V'hastakel v'shosh v'dvar v'inatav v'de'avera. You should think about three, concern yourself with these three things, and you won't come to doing an avera. Da'am alam aylam imcha, you should know what is above you. Ayin roa, an eye which sees, v'ozan shamas, and an ear which hears, v'chol ma'asecha b'sefer nechtav. And all your actions are written in a book, are recorded. Okay, and the Rambam says, mefurish b'torah, yosam ma'isim yidun l'fan of yisala, kefishu yidei osam. Amar m'sifra v'shak zata. He says, it's open in the Torah that the actions are known before God. However, he knows that. It doesn't mean like it's a mashal, the book. Okay, like the Pasuk of the Torah says, Hashem Sivrach HaShek Sapta, the book that you wrote. So it says that's an open thing in the Torah, that God knows all the actions that you do are known before God. And saying if a person keeps this in mind, that there's an eye which sees and an ear which hears and a book, everything is written and a book recorded, so then a person won't come to Avera, so if you think about those things. So I think insofar as, I mean, we'd have to, that really deserves analysis on its own. What's that idea? But if you're trying to unify, it would seem to be the route towards unification would come once you have the full picture. We're missing a part. I just realized that. But despite that, I don't know if anyone has any thoughts about unifying what we already did. And, you know, maybe a superficial view of this, I wouldn't mind taking it. But it's always hard. I mean, unification is a tricky thing. Because, I mean, you know, you could kind of have superficial things. I feel it's only worthwhile if it's really like some sort of something tight. Like for instance, it was worthwhile, if you gain new insight based upon it. Just to come up with some convenient, you know, way to, relate them. I mean, you can relate almost anything to anything. So, I mean, just to find some sort of convenient way to correlate these things. I mean, I would think the value in trying to unify them would be that it would help you gain further insight. And I'd say that's a way to measure whether you're actually saying something worthwhile or just giving a nice, convenient, synopsis. You know, like the question is sometimes when you say three things, if you think about the unification, it could bring out a further insight, you know, into these things. Shed more light on the underlying, like maybe they're all going for an underlying tendency in a person or something like that. So if I show through thinking about them all together, you could arrive at a further point in each of the individual things. But I don't have any thoughts about on that. Does anyone have?
Yeah.
Sure. Just to recall. So again, with the three things, or the four things now, I guess. But the first is which path should a person choose? The path which is good for him and for the world, for society. The next thing is you should, be zohir about all mitzvot because you know the schar. But you could rank them, you know, based upon the back door rankings. And then it says that you should know what's above you. An eye, if you think about what's above you, then you won't sin. An eye, an ear, and everything's recorded. Okay. So if anyone has their thoughts, but if not, then I guess you can think about that. Maybe if I have something to say about that, maybe we could do it a little bit at the beginning of next week. But otherwise, it's kind of a good question to think about. Anyways, it's worth that last part is totally, we didn't analyze, we didn't say anything about it. You know, what's the point of that? What are these three different things, and what's the punchline? I mean, it's pretty descriptive. Just say a person should know God's here. I mean, everyone knows that. I mean, what's he getting at? Presumably he's telling us something that we wouldn't have naturally known. But they do all seem totally unrelated. I mean, one of them is about choosing a path, the middle path. The second one is about how you relate to doing the mitzvahs and reward and punishment. The third one is like remembering that God is there so you don't do sins. I mean, it's pretty hodgepodge of stuff. But again, I don't know for sure that these things have to be all unified. I mean, maybe it's just that it's going through each of all Minnesota and showing intelligent things that they said. I mean, I think someone told me that in Rebbe's Pirkei Avos Shiras. They listened to them. Maybe the Rebbe Gober told me, or someone told me that Rebbe Gober said, or something like that. That on the Pirkei Avos Shiras. I just haven't listened to that many. But Rebbe often unified them. I don't know. It's kind of second, third hand, I heard. So I don't know what that's worth, but. You know, you're more convinced of something when you see it firsthand. I haven't really seen it enough. But,
it could just be that being that guy.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it could be. I mean, the idea, I think, in Pirkei Avos is trying to show us, or at least one of the things trying to show us, is that the Baal HaMesorah were not just smart scientists, but they were perfected. Like, the Baal HaMesorah is someone who's not just intelligent and learning Gemara. But, I mean, it comes through. There's a correlation between the Torah, between greatness in thought and perfection. And these are people who are great, not just in the abstract in the area of Chachma. The Baal HaMesorah are perfected. A person's imperfected, they're not going to be a Baal HaMesorah. It's going to affect them in their growth in Torah. So it's like showing you in Avos that all the Baal HaMesorah were excelled not only in the abstract areas of of halachic areas, but in Hashkafa as well. They have the insight. So it could be just showing you that each of the Baal HaMesorah is showing you ideas which they espouse. But maybe they're not necessarily all one unified thing. Maybe they're just, maybe the unification is that they're all said by Rabbi, or they're all said by the given, I don't know. It's the kind of thing you have to kind of see from experience with the Pirkei Avos. I think it's worth considering whenever you do a Mishnah and see if you come up with something. I wouldn't necessarily force, that's something I wouldn't force anything. But if it gives you a new idea, then it's a new idea anyways, and it's a good idea, then whatever. Who cares if it's always true, but it could help you see a new idea. And if it doesn't, so if you see any ideas, then fine. That's why it's not worth forcing anything here. But, sometimes just directing your energy, your mind towards that can help you see something deeper.